Thank you. Today I'd like to present a paper on the musical characteristics of Charlie Parker's 1951 recording of All of Me, which is known to have been made at Lenny Tristano's studio in Manhattan, or perhaps in his residence in Flushing, New York. It's not quite certain. It had Tristano on the piano, of course, Charlie Parker on the alto saxophone, and Kenny Clark playing on a phone book or a stack of newspaper. The recording of is of special importance in two ways. First, it is the only complete recording of Parker's performance of that tune. Another occasion was just 1 minute of the tune, and it's presumed to have been from perhaps 1949, but nobody's for certain. And the second importance is that it's played not in the original key of C major, but A flat major, which is kind of interesting because Tristano liked to play that tune and improvise on it in A flat major. And I asked his bassist, Peter Ind, from the 1950s. Of course, I met him in 1997. And I asked Peter Ind, why did Lenny like to play in A flat instead of this C major? And he said, I don't know. But Tristano played it in A-flat major, at least on a couple other recordings of the same tune from the mid-1950s. In this recording, Tristano only plays a supportive role of comping, but provides a harmonic background different from what many bebop pianists usually did. Accordingly, Parker plays an exquisite solo of five choruses, displaying rhythmic displacement and chromaticism, which were musical elements that Tristano further developed in later recordings. So here, later on in an analysis, short analysis of the solo, I will point out the elements, important elements of Charlie Parker's improvisation that Lenny Tristano later picked up and developed. A jazz pianist and teacher of jazz improvisation, Tristano was an Italian-American, born in Chicago in 1919, and became blind by the age of 10, he began his professional career in his teens in Chicago in the 1930s. He moved to New York in the summer of 1946, and having emerged as an original voice in the 1940s, he was considered a prime representative of progressive jazz by many critics and musicians. He forged an individual voice during a period when bebop was the predominant musical style. He respected Parker as the progenitor of bebop and one of the greatest figures in jazz history, but made a point of not imitating Charlie Parker. He is actually known for criticizing contemporary jazz musicians for imitating Parker's music. I'll read a longer quote later on, but in 1951 he stated, "If I were Bird, I'd have all the best boppers in the country thrown into jail." A pioneering individualist, Tristano was able to achieve an extremely individual style characterized by advanced harmonic language and rhythmic complexity, but most of all, linear construction of the melody. The chief influence of that linear element in his solo comes from, I would say, Lester Young and Charlie Parker. Some of the salient features of improvisation can be considered extensions of the elements of Parker's style. First, I would like to say a little more on Lenny Tristano, but mostly his relationship with Charlie Parker. According to Tristano, he first became aware of Parker's music while he was in Chicago at the suggestion of a black musician. Quote, it's from his 1973 interview. "The reason I got hold of Parker's records is because during the 30s and the early 40s, I used to hang out in the black ghetto in Chicago, which is about the biggest black ghetto you could find. And in those days, I was the only white person for miles. I had Jay McShane's records in 1940 and 1941. It was laid on me by a black cat. He said, I want you to listen to Charlie Parker." Tristan arrived in New York in the summer of 1946. In his early career, he considered Dizzy Gillespie the main representative of the bebop style, calling him the master of the new idiom, and actually criticized people, bebopers, of imitating Dizzy Gillespie. But after he became acquainted with Parker and his music, he changed his view completely, turning his attention to Parker as the main force of bebop. This seems to have taken place during the engagement in 1947 at the Three Deuces, where Tristano met Parker. At this club, Tristano got to know Parker, of course, and felt both a musical and personal empathy with him. And this had a profound impact on Tristano in forming a lifelong allegiance to Parker. Even though the exact date of this Three Deuces date is not known, it's sometime after Parker came back from his days in California, especially from Camarillo. On meeting Parker, Tristano became appreciative not only of his music, but also his caring personality. He reminisced, again from the 1973 interview. So he was playing opposite his trio, piano trio, it's a piano, bass, and guitar trio. And it was playing opposite Charlie Parker, quote, "And they had a lot of crap on the bandstand. And the people who worked with me knew I was cool, so they just split. Bert was sitting on the side listening. So he very casually walked up to the piano, and I believe he meant what he said. He told me how much he enjoyed my music. And while he's doing that, he kind of puts his arm around me, and we're walking off the stage together. So he's doing both things. He's telling me how much he enjoyed my music, but he's making sure I'm not going to break my neck either. And he was so hip in doing it. If I hadn't been around a long time, I would not have known that's what he was up to, which to me is completely beautiful. Because in my experience, musicians rarely show that much compassion," unquote. There's another account of this incident he wrote for Robert Reisner's book on Charlie Parker. Tristano's respect for Parker verged on reverence, and he also appreciated Parker's sincerity as a musician, contrasting it to Gillespie's tendency toward comic effects. Quote, "His dedication was natural like that was Bird. When he got up on the bandstand, he was up there to play. And I believe that that was kind of what used to bug him about with this sometimes," unquote. In fact, there was mutual respect for each other between Parker and Tristano. According to Parker, quote, "As for Leonard Tristano, I'd like to go on record as saying I endorse his work in every particular. They say he's cold. They're wrong. He has a big heart, and it's in his music. Obviously, he also has tremendous technical ability, and, you know, he can play anywhere with anybody. He's a tremendous musician. I call him the great acclimatizer." And people debate about what this word acclimatizer really means. As mentioned above, Tristano considered Parker as the progenitor of bebop. In explaining the reason for the predominating influence of Parker, Tristano attributed it solely to Parker's prodigious musical ability and intellect. It's interesting that Tristano distinguished between mere imitations and a creative evolution from the influence, as with Bud Powell and Fats Navarro. Quote, "Number one, Bird was a musical genius. In the second place, the intelligence, the brilliance that you could sense from Bird, you can hear in the way he puts his material together. Thousands of people copied every note Bird played, but they can only play it in the way he did, except for Bud Powell and Fats Navarro. In other words, in their brain someplace, it was reorganized. You understand what I mean? That's a combination of intuition and intelligence. Similarly, on the issue of the origin of bebop, Tristano focused on the value of Parker's music. Bird's music is so perfect that it's scientific. Had he been a composer, he could have written hundreds of compositions in the same way composers use their material. He had the kind of material that he invented on the spot in solos that could have been transformed to preludes, fugues, symphonies, and concertos. Bird's music is tonal. His music is so structurally perfect that you cannot change a note in it to make it better. I'll just note a little bit about Tristano's view of jazz history. He thought jazz evolved through the contribution of important improvisers, including Louis Armstrong, Roy Eldridge, Lester Young, and Charlie Parker. Those would be the four main improvisers he credited. Quote, "The great cultural revolution, in my opinion, started with Louis. It went from Louis to Roy Eldridge through Prez, that took time, because during the middle and late 30s, everybody thought Prez was kind of cute, because everybody was on Coleman Hawkins, who was a good saxophone player, but he was no Prez. But it was in the 40s that people began to realize that Prez was a great genius, but I think Bird knew it. He also said, the vocabulary of jazz has been spoken by just a few people. The first flowering was Louis Armstrong, who was a pinnacle of his era, then by Lester Young, Charles Christian, and Roy Eldridge. And finally, the third period, the period we're still in, by Charlie Parker. People who play any differently from that are not accepted. And he was speaking in 1959. It is noteworthy that among the musicians Tristan mentioned, Young and Parker can be considered the most significant influences, as he considered them true originals, and they were the most important musical figures in the development of his music. Another point he made was the suggestion that his music was not accepted because he did not try to imitate other musicians. Considering the previous statement by Tristano, he apparently took a great pride in the fact that Parker liked his playing. And according to him, what Parker appreciated was his originality. More specifically, Tristano stated that Parker was bothered by countless imitators, which was a result of a widespread influence of his music. Quote, I was never a copier. That's not to say what I came out with was great, but I was not a copier. And I think that's one of the things that Bird enjoyed about listening to me. The point I was trying to bring out is that I really do believe, and this is just my own belief, that Bird enjoyed playing with me because I was not imitating him, and everybody in the world was. If you went down the street, meaning 52nd Street in New York, and walked into a club and heard a 10-piece band, everybody stood up and took about 50 courses of Bird's licks, and it stayed that way until, say, maybe in the mid-50s. And it's finally caught up to Bird. It really bugged the shit out of him because he told me so. Again, from the 1973 interview. Tristano asserted that Parker generated bebop by establishing its melodic structure and vocabulary and saw the appropriation of Parker's music as a big problem. So let me quote the longer version of what he said in 1951. I want to say something about Charlie Parker and his importance in the picture, as great as we all think Bud Powell is. Where would he be if it hadn't been for Bird? He's the first one that should remember it. He told me himself that Bird showed him the way to a means of expression. George Shearing shows a good deal of personality, but he's still a takeoff on Parker. You take Groove on High or pick a random any five records by well-known boppers and compare the ideas and phrases. You'll see that if Charlie Parker wanted to invoke plagiarism laws, he could sue almost everybody who's made a record in the last 10 years. If I were Bird, I'd have all the best boppers in the country thrown into jail. So that's from the blind vault test that from 1951. The subject of appropriation of Parker's music remained as a major concern to Tristano throughout his years. In 1958, he criticized Parker's imitators, giving what may be an explanation of why Tristan himself, was not recognized, meaning he refused to duplicate the vocabulary. What we have now is a stereotyped vocabulary, and unless a guy uses it, he's disregarded by other musicians. Quote, he also said, the jazz musician's function is to feel. Jazz is improvising. It is a personal emotional impact of a great improviser. It provides the listener with an experience he can have no other way. But as today, when the vocabulary is the same, you have lost that experience. How intense can you be with someone else's words? He also said, Bird was certainly greater than all his licks. That's why his imitators are not great. They are only doing parts. Now, according to Tristano, Parker was experiencing frustrations in the 1950s and was looking for a breakthrough. One of Parker's considerations was to collaborate with Tristano on a project, a new record company called Jazz Records, even though it issued only one record. According to Tristano, quote, one time he came to my studio with Kenny And at the time, Anne Clark, who turned out to be Annie Ross. Now, I was starting a new record company, and Bert wanted to join it. The only problem we had is that I didn't have enough money to give him in front. And one of the things he said, and this is a quote, he was tired of hearing everybody play like him, and he wanted to get into something else. And he saw he could do it, we could do it together. Now, of course, I don't expect anybody to believe that. And I have seldom said it to anyone, but it happened. Parker was indeed in search of a breakthrough since the late 1940s, and Tristano's new project, as well as his independent musical style, may have intrigued Parker to consider a possibility of collaboration, leading toward a new direction for him. Tristano well understood the reasons for Parker's discontent. First of all, he thought Parker felt a need to be acknowledged as an artist, for modern jazz to be accepted as an art form. Quote, one of the things in Bird's life was that he wanted to be recognized as an artist, not as an entertainer, on a higher level than the nightclub. He wanted to be recognized by composers. He wanted everyone to know how great he was. Charlie Parker not only provided the life-giving force, which is the essence of Bob, but he also adequately expressed the music, the creator and the performer. Parker himself referred to the demeaning context for performing jazz, according to Edgar Varèse, whom Parker wanted to study with. Varèse said, he spoke of being tired of the environment his work relegated him to. Quote, I am so steeped in this and can't get out, unquote, he said. And Parker later said, quote, there are different ways comparing classical music and jazz. There are different ways of saying things musically, and don't forget classical music has that long tradition. But in 50 or 75 years, the contributions of present-day jazz will be taken as seriously as classical music. You wait and see. So it was Parker. Another reason Tristano gave as why Parker was so frustrated was that he was weary of being imitated, which made him aware of the limitation of bebop as a musical style. It's well documented that he tried to study with classical composer Edgar Varèse one, and he also wanted to go to Europe, for example, to study with Nadia Boulanger, and there is an account that he was looking for an apartment in Paris and all that. Now I want to go to the occasion for making the recording. Actually, before that, there were a few occasions before that in 1951 when Tristan had an opportunity to perform with Parker, mostly in the 1940s. For example, in September, Tristano played in on a radio battle between jazz styles. They both took part in a septet representing the moderners, quote-unquote, pitted against the so-called, quote-unquote, moldy figs, that is, Dixieland musicians. The members of the modern group was selected by Barry Yulanoff, a jazz critic and co-editor of the Metronome magazine at the time. This band, called Barry Yulanoff's All-Star Modern Jazz Musicians, also included Dizzy Gillespie, Parker, John LaPorta, Billy Bauer, Ray Brown, and Max Roach. It's only fitting that Yulanoff included Tristano in the modern group, considering his enthusiasm for Tristano. He said he gathered this group. But Tristano, on the other hand, gave a different account, saying that Bird included me. Quote, now I said to him, what you really should do is to use Bud Powell. There were two things happening at the time, Bird and everybody who copied him, and what I was trying to do through my playing and through my teaching, which I'm not saying I was anywhere nearly as great as Bird, but it wasn't copying Bird. So I thought it would be a good idea to mix the two. Unquote. Tristan also commented on the experience playing with Parker, especially Parker's awareness of the harmonies that Tristano was using, the substitute chords, and how Parker is instantaneously responded to. Before we were to go on together to do a couple of mutual network shows, meaning the Battle of Styles, I was sitting at the piano playing something. He started playing with me, and he played his ass off. He wasn't used to the chords I played. I play sort of my own chords in a lot of ways. They were different. I don't remember the tune, but whatever we did, he was right on top of chords, but like we had rehearsed. He has always been limited by the people he played with. If he had made records without a piano harmonically, I'm not completing this sentence. The rest of the band is not with him. The right chord structure is not behind him. Most of the kids who played piano for Bird and played in his style, they always use the same chord progression. It does make it a lot easier for the horn player. It takes a horn player with real ears to make it and play something, meaning to cope with a new chord progression and even play something good. Now, there was another chance in 1953, the famous Massey Hall concert in Canada, where the people who were sponsoring the concert wanted actually Tristano to play in the Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker quintet. But then again, Tristano recommended Bud Powell to the people. So this recording from 1951, All of Me, was, as I said, either taped, at his Manhattan studio, which he used for teaching and recording, and it said that he had a very good recording equipment. But this recording, obviously, is the quality is not very good. So it may have been recorded in his Flushing home, but his first wife, Judy Tristano, said they had a small drum set, and we don't hear a drum set here. So I still don't know exactly what happened. What I want to show here is not the usual analysis of the formulas or the motives that Parker used in his solos, but the elements that influence Tristano greatly, as reflected in later recordings. So again, Tristano really did not play the idiomatic vocabulary or the formulas that Charlie Parker used. So before we play, listen to the music, I just wanted to point out a few things. So there is the harmony, which is usually displaced. So All of Me, of course, was written in 1931. It follows the regular kind of four-measure module in a 32-bar format. So we would say first eight measures, like A, second measures, B, third, eight measures, coming back to the A section, and last eight measures, digressing to the C, a last section. Now, I just jotted down the chord symbols that I think are represented by Parker's playing. And the first eight measures are intro. The intro mostly played by Tristano. And this is just an approximation. I couldn't hear the chords very well. And he's playing both-handed. And he comes through the whole solo. And since there was no bass player, I think he kind of took on the role of playing the piano and bass part. But his comping is very low in register, which is unusual. But that is actually his style, not just because of the absence of bass player. Parker's comping or voicing was very different from what bebop musicians did or post-bop musicians did, especially like the very standard Bill Evans-type non-chord voicing. He doesn't use any of that. Some of the chords are root-based, some of them are not. So one thing that profoundly two and four, so it kind of turns you around and you don't really know where the music, where beat one went. So I marked some of those, and some of the chords are substitute chords. For example, the chromaticism here looking like E major in measure 16 in the second chord. That phrase comes back a few times, and I don't know exactly what chord it, I would say it represents, but it certainly goes outside the given context. Again, here, another example of polyrhythm measure, 19 and 20, the way he uses this figure that spans five beats. So it goes 5 plus 5, and he has one beat left over. And Tristano did a lot of that in his later recording called Line Up from 1955. So that's up. And here, measure 31, instead of going from B flat minor 7 to E flat 7, he goes digresses to E minor. Sidestepping, meaning he steps out of the key. So since we're running out of time, I'll just mention quickly measure 13 and 14. We have the phrase starting on 4 and 2. Again, it turns you around a little. And harmonic displacement, sometimes he likes to interpolate a 5 chord before a given chord. And E major, again, measure 16. To the solo. Play course. Which show the voice leading, the way some of these notes, especially the higher notes, and also accent in a lot of cases, that show continuous melodic movement, for example, here. He did a lot of these, actually three notes plus three notes, and with the higher notes, even though they're separated by other notes, do continue the melodic line. So really great voice leading, and I also wanted to point out that Leonard Tristano did quite a bit of that in his later solo. Anyway, sorry about this rush. A little ran out of time. Thank you.